Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy, unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with Rosemary Thornton. She is a near-death experiencer. She's even written a book about it. And guys, her story will blow you away. Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I heard your story and all of them are always different. You're like the probably 20th near-death experiencer I've interviewed on the podcast. But let me tell you, the actual people that I have on the podcast that tell us about their near-death experiences, they're the most downloaded because people love to hear what happened to you. So let's just start at the beginning and tell me what happened to you.
Well, I got some really good advice from Ellen Dye. And Ellen Dye is another amazing woman who had a profound NDE that changed her life, as they always do, forever. I met her from having an NDE, and she told me years ago, she said, nobody wants to hear what happened before. All anyone wants to hear is what it's like in heaven. That's all anyone wants to hear. So if you listen to my earlier podcast, I'm like, blah, 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 and then that, and blah, 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 and then that.
Yeah.
But she was right. All anybody wants to hear is what happened in heaven. But I'll give you the very short, condensed version. In 2016, my beloved husband, who I believe to be the love of my life, came home one day and ended his life at our home. Oh. And thus began a profound descent into hell. The worst hell you can imagine.
Yes.
And I was so miserable. And for 29 months, I was not even in survival mode. I wasn't eating. I lost a profound amount of weight. I wasn't in very good shape and I didn't want to live. And every night I prayed three prayers is, God, either heal me or let me go.
Yeah.
Secondly, I can't handle any more decisions. I had severe decision fatigue, which is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And three, I said, when I die, please spare me the life of you. Because what's interesting is I had been a sincere student of NDEs ever since Raymond Moody's little trade paperback, Life After Life, came out,
yes.
I think in 76. And then Betty Eady and Danyon Brinkley and George Ritchie. I had pretty much read those books again and again and again, so I was fascinated by the topic. I couldn't get enough.
Mm.
So I knew there was going to be a life review, and I knew that what I had been through after my husband's suicide in 2016, I had fallen apart. I had a break from reality,
yeah.
And I had to have somebody, a dear friend, actually move into my home and take care of me. I couldn't even feed myself, and I didn't care. So yeah, I prayed every night, heal me or let me go, with a leaning hard toward just let me out of this.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, the guilt alone, though, Rosemary, I'm sure, wasn't a pleasant experience because you're thinking, I'm sure, what did I do wrong? Did I drive him to this? And you probably didn't do anything wrong and it wasn't at all about you.
No, and there was a group on social media called Sisterhood of Suicide Survivors, and that group really did save my life because I've learned the experiences I had were absolutely typical. And you know, one of the amazing things that happened to me, I encountered an angel within minutes of getting news after my husband had taken his life. And I was in Boston. I'd gone to Boston to visit my beautiful daughter there.
Yeah.
And we had not been on the ground, I don't think 30 minutes, when the call came that my husband had been found. Mm-hmm. There had been a gunshot heard, and then somebody went to investigate, and there he was. So I was in Boston and I had my daughter just take me straight back to the airport so I could fly home. It was actually a Southwest Airlines flight heading home. There were no seats left on the plane. And I just said to the angels, I said, I have to get home. This is the only flight. You know, God will make a way where there is no way.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, there is no way. They just told me that every seat is booked and they have two people waiting,
yeah,
on standby. But you know what? The two people didn't show up. And a couple extra people didn't show up. There was one seat left on that plane.
Oh.
And they held that plane for me at the gate. And I got through security and I ran. This was a big airport. I ran down the corridor with my luggage trying to get to the plane. And I encountered the boarding agent. And she said, are you Mrs. Thornton? And I said, yes. And she said, keep running. And I did. And they swam the door behind me and took off.
Wow.
But in that one seat, I was seated beside a guy and his name was Dale, and he was wearing he looked like a biker with a hair and a ponytail and tattoos up his neck and had on a t-shirt with a leather jacket. And I mean, he was a pretty rough looking cat, but I was seated beside him and he said, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, do you want to talk about it? And I said, I just found out my husband ended his life, and I don't know what to do. And he looked straight ahead for a minute, and he said, there's a reason that you're seated beside me. He said, wherever you go in life, whatever happens after this, I want you to remember that God is watching over you. And he said, my mother killed herself. He said the circumstances were very similar, because my husband, when I was in Boston on the ground for just those few minutes, he had started an ugly argument with me, and he knew how to get me going. He was a very smart man. And then after the argument, we both hung up very angry, and that was the last time I spoke to him. And this man told me, he said, my mother did the same thing. She started an argument with me. There were angry words, and then she ended her own life. And he said, I want to tell you, you will survive this. He said, the fact that you got yourself on a plane and that you're sitting here looking surprisingly calm, surprisingly peaceful, he said, you're going to be okay. He said, I can tell you're going to get through this. And then he delineated this long list. He said, now the first few months, you won't be able to think about this without maybe crying hysterically or being a mess. Yeah. But he said, then one day you're going to realize you went an hour without thinking about him. And then one day you'll realize you went a few hours. And then one day you're going to realize it doesn't hurt as bad as it did. The pain won't be as sharp and cutting. And he said, and one day you'll forgive yourself when you realize there was nothing you could do to make this happen. And there was nothing you could have done to prevent it. No. You just weren't that important in his life. And that all those things were profound. And given the fact that I was in shock and I was a mess, the fact that I could recall that many details of the conversation is in of itself quite a blessing.
Oh,
so
Rosemary.
That's how this started.
What a poignant story, because, you know, that was divine intervention. Let's just be honest, you know?
Yeah. One seat on a plane, and that one seat is next to this guy, Dale,
right?
Who could talk to me like my own dear mother could not have spoken to me any more lovingly, gently, and wisely. I mean, the things he said were just incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how could anyone, humanly speaking, arrange that series of events?
No. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, someone, God, source, whatever you want to call it, they had something to do with this. And they knew, you know, regardless if anybody wants to believe this kind of stuff or not, this is not a coincidence. I don't really believe that much in coincidences anymore. I do think that we're all connected. We're all connected through source, I believe. So after that, did you kind of go into a tailspin where you said you had lost some weight? Tell me more.
Yeah, I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I had nightmares. And yet, again, one of the profound things that happened, this was only, I guess, 6 or 7 days afterward, because no, it was more than that. See, when everyone comes for the funeral and, you know, people are around you, it kind of helps. But I was in such a mental state. I can't begin. I mean, I'm a sensitive soul. I'm an empath. I just have always felt very connected to the angels. And I just couldn't get my bearings. I just couldn't get my feet under me.
Yeah.
But then a friend let me move into her home for about 3 weeks, which was incredibly kind. She was actually a neighbor.
Yeah.
And my friend that ended up being my caregiver, he was over there with me. And one night I fell asleep in the bed and he sat, you know, he would sit up through the night and keep an eye on me. And I was asleep, which was rare in itself. But he said you became very agitated in your sleep and started becoming very upset. And he said, and then you said, Tom. And he said, somebody walked into the room that I couldn't see, that he couldn't see. And they sat down in the rocking chair. It was a wicker rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
And he said you could hear the wicker creak as the weight of somebody was in it. And then it went back and forth a little bit. And he said, and then you calmed down.
Wow.
And Tom was a very, very, very dear friend, probably one of the closest people on earth who had passed on about 8 years prior.
Yeah,
Tom came for a visit that night, I'm sure.
Wow. Well, you know, listen, I just had a dream expert on the episode right before yours, and I do believe we have visitors in our dreams, but I also think we may astral travel or even cross dimensions so that we can see our loved ones that are no longer in our 3D world.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we're, as you said earlier, we're more connected than we could ever imagine.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got a lot of friends now who've been through unspeakable trauma, unspeakable. And that's honestly, you know, people are like, you write that book for the money. Well, no, I haven't made, you know, if you say you're a writer too, you know, writers are the original starving artists.
We're not doing it for money. No, we're not.
No. And my prior book that did so well was on history. And that book supported me. But I mean, I think that book made, I don't know, 15 grand a year, which for a writer's like, yeehaw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's amazing. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There are some authors who do really well at the gate, and they just continue doing well and they continue writing. But there's people like me who did really well and I made some money. But after a while, I just got burnt out, and because I was writing one after the other, and I still had kids at home and all the things. So, yeah, no, I didn't do it for the money. I did it because I needed something to do. The kids were getting older and I knew I wanted a hobby, and now I'm doing this and I'm so happy to have you here. So back to you. You're not doing all that great. You're really upset. You're living at your friend's house. Tell me what happened next.
Well, I really just wanted to be dead. And I came across a Bible verse. Mm. I think it's 2 Corinthians 10:13. It said, God will show you the way out. Mm. And I thought, oh boy, that's good news. I do not have to endure this.
Yeah.
There's going to be an end. And I even had a financial advisor sit down with me and say, where do you see yourself in 2 years? Mm. I said, oh, that's easy. In 2 years, I'll be dead. I'm not going to survive this. Human beings are not meant to survive this.
Oh.
But what I was going to say about the book, one of the great blessings of the book and the podcast, really the podcast, I have met so many phenomenal, spiritually profound people.
Yes.
And that's the thing. If you have this level of trauma, but then you cross the Red Sea, you know, the Red Sea parts, and you get to the other
right.
side, people love the story when it's over. But when you're the one facing the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army's coming after you, and you think all the Pharaoh's slaves are going to die after they agreed to follow you, those are hard times.
Yes.
But the people I have met, the people who helped me the most in my time of great need, were the people who had been through unbelievably severe trauma.
Yes.
And survived it and came out on the other side of it. And then they literally kind of reach back and say, let me give you some kind words, like Dale on the airplane.
Yes.
And like so many other people. And you know, a funny thing that happened is as funny as an interesting. You mentioned coincidences. Einstein said coincidences are miracles where God chooses to remain anonymous.
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes. I'm all about that. You know, I think that we, like you said, we're connected, and most of us are good. I think sometimes we derail and we don't do so well, but you know, we all end up back there regardless. And
so the beauty part of the book is meeting all these wonderful people.
Yes.
And a few Christmases ago, I guess about 4 or 5 Christmases ago, a friend asked me to come join him for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I literally flew, I don't know, 1,000 miles to be with my friend at Christmas. Rosemary's is kind of crazy. You know, you're leaving your family, your kids, just so you can be with a friend at Christmas. But I thought, all right, it seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So we're at this Christmas gathering with my friend, and we were having a good time, and I was glad to be there. But then it was like, I guess, 6 or 7 people around the table. And then the hostess, who had been so gracious, she got up from the table. She walked into the kitchen, which I could see from my spot at the table, and she stood at the sink and sobbed.
Aww.
And I was looking around like, what do we do? And I thought, I don't know, but I know I can't watch this.
Right.
I have to go talk to her.
Yeah.
So I got up from, because I barely knew this woman. Everyone else around the table knew her well. I got up from the table and I put my hand gently on her back. And I said, what's going on? And she said, oh, you would never understand. I said, I might, I might not, but tell me.
Yeah.
And she said, well, my husband and I had an argument several years ago. And then he went out to the porch and he put a gun in his mouth and ended his life.
Oh, my gosh.
And she said, every holiday, I just cry because I think about him all the time.
Oh.
And if only we hadn't had that argument. And I said, listen here. I giggled softly. And she looked at me like I was a nut. But I said, listen, my husband did the same thing, same modus operandi, argument, get you stirred up, and then go do the thing. I said, my husband did the same precise thing in the same way. And she looked at me, she said, are you serious? And I said, look, these SOBs can really F us up, can't they? And she laughed. And I knew when she laughed that we were all going to be okay.
Yeah.
And she hugged me. She had been kind of stiff because, you know, people in grief don't really know how to
right.
live.
Yeah.
I was so grateful. And my friend who had, you know, asked me to come out to Detroit with him, on the way home, he said, I knew when we saw the hostess sobbing that you would somehow make it right.
Oh.
And he said, when I saw her hug you and laughing, I knew that you had helped her. Yeah. And he said, I was so proud to be your friend.
Oh.
And this guy who I went to Detroit for has spent 25 years being my best friend and running to my rescue when I'm in trouble. So I was finally able to repay a quarter inch of the kindness he's done for me, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the beauty part of living after this NDE, and even before, but I have no doubt. When people go through severe trauma, the angels swarm you. They literally swarm you. And if you can find a way to just say out loud, angels, I don't know who's on duty right now, but I need some big help.
Yes.
They will come to you and they will help you.
I agree. Listen, and my listeners know this. I'm like, hey, I go to the healing temple every night because, you know, you can. And you can go and ask your angels and your ancestors and God and whoever else you believe in. Let's go to the healing temple and let's just wrap ourselves in the white light. And girl, I tell you, I feel so much better doing that often. Like I do it often, whether I'm just mentally or physically needing it.
Yeah, there are spiritual resources that are so significant and so at hand. And that prayer, somebody actually sent me that prayer. I was telling you earlier, I get a lot of emails. Somebody sent me that prayer that said, God, I don't know what angels are on duty right now, but I need somebody right now.
Yeah, and they'll come. And
They do. But I've also learned one of the rules of this stuff is they need to be invited in.
Yes, they do.
They will not intrude without being asked.
Yes, you have to ask. So let's go back to your NDE. Tell me about the time that started happening for you. You know, what kind of brought that on?
Well, I was pretty miserable.
Yeah.
But I had learned how to mask. I had learned how to hide the grief enough to be in public.
Yes.
And yet little things could set me off that I would just be a mess. And I've never been one to take prescription pills or to drink, but I would take a handful of Valium and have a whiskey chaser.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, which is what leads to your heart stopping.
Yes.
It's a very bad idea. And more than a couple of times, I just passed out. And I was like, that's okay. At least passed out, I'm at peace.
Oh.
So I was pretty messed up. And I was pretending not to be. But boy, does that take a lot of energy. It's like I likened it to the cloaking device, the Romulan cloaking device on Star Trek, that they can't fire weapons while the cloaking device is engaged because the cloaking device takes so much energy.
Yeah.
So they have to disable the cloaking device to fire the lasers or the weapons.
Yeah.
I felt like that was me, that it took so much energy to pretend to be okay.
Yeah.
So I was having some physical problems. I had a series of bad symptoms. I mean, I knew something was very wrong with my body. And I had some gynecological bleeding that was abnormal.
Mm.
And I was 59 at the time. And I went to the doctor and they diagnosed me with cancer.
Oh, no.
And they said it was stage 2, so it had already spread a bit. So they sent me, after doing all the preliminary tests, they sent me for a surgical biopsy to figure out how far this had spread.
Mm-hmm.
And after the surgery is when all the trouble started, because they took flesh from some different places to figure things out. And then I woke up from the surgery in the recovery room and I said, hey, something's wrong. I'm bleeding a bunch. And they said, no, you're fine. Go home. So I did. And they were very dismissive. 3 times I said, something has gone very wrong.
You knew.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was bleeding profusely even then.
Oh,
so they sent me home. And now in retrospect, one, I do believe this was God doing an urgent human recall. You know, I really do. But if I had this experience to live over again, I would have said to the nurse, go get the doctor.
Yeah.
Go get the doctor. And I want to tell him I'm in danger here.
Right.
Bad things are happening. But anyway, she didn't. She sent me home. And on the way home, I bled more. And when I got home, I bled more. And then I stood in my shower because I had this beautiful white carpet.
Oh,
and, you know, you don't want to leave a housekeeping nightmare behind for your heir. So I was very worried about bleeding on the carpet.
Oh, my
God. I went and stood in the shower because I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah.
And I stood in the shower thinking, you know, 2 Chronicles 10:13, God will show you a way out.
Yeah.
This is my exit off the superhighway of life. God has granted me a gracious exit. And nobody will say, I did this to myself. I actually pursued medical care.
Yeah.
They botched it. And now all I have to do is sit down in the shower and I will pass away quietly. And I knew that dying from exsanguination, which is what bleeding to death is, is a very peaceful way to go. And I thought, all right, so God gave me a peaceful passage. And I thought about all the people who for 2 years and 5 months, because it's been 2 years, 5 months since my husband's death, had done everything to save me. Yeah. I mean, had surrendered their life, had surrendered their day-to-day routine, had given me their place in their home, who had fed me,
yeah.
who had helped me. And I thought, oh, crap, is this really fair to them
right?
to just sit down and die after they did everything to save me?
Yeah.
I thought, oh, crap, it really isn't. So I went out to my, wrapped a towel around myself and, you know, got kind of dressed. And I went out to the living room where my two friends had been waiting to, you know, to bring me a meal or help me. And I said, I need to go to the ER. I'm bleeding to death. And boy, they were on it. Nobody said, oh, you're fine. They called an ambulance. The ambulance came, took me to the hospital.
Wow.
And then at the little ER they took me to, it was a standalone ER, I think should be illegal. I had a very young doctor, and yet I had a nurse about my age.
Yeah.
And I think the doctor made some mistakes
Ooh.
Because they did not send me on to a hospital. They should have just put me back in the ambulance and said, she needs to be at a trauma center.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they didn't understand the severity of what was happening.
Yeah.
And the doctor left the room after giving me some painkillers because I had been in pain from her exam.
Yeah.
But the nurse was very motherly, and I grabbed her hand. One of the interesting things, the brain consumes 70% of the body's oxygen. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. No, I did not know
so
that.
When you're bleeding out, one of the side effects of bleeding out is panic. Because your brain can no longer process stuff.
Okay.
And because your brain is not getting enough oxygen to manage all the things that happen there.
Yeah.
So I grabbed the nurse's hand, and plus I'm in this now. I grabbed the nurse's hand and I said, don't let me die. You know, I've come this far. Don't let me die.
Right.
And she leaned over and I was crying. I had tears coming out of my eyes laying on the gurney in the ER cubicle. And she said, very tenderly, she said, oh, honey, we have many solutions for this. We are not going to let you die. And then I passed out.
Yeah.
But she thought, I guess she thought I'd just fallen asleep from the painkiller. Who knows? Maybe I had.
Yeah.
But I awakened from what I describe as a deep, dreamless state, being catapulted out of my body. And it was extremely dramatic. I mean, I have described it like toast popping out of a toaster. It was profound, the urgency with which I left my body, and I was floating away from my body. And the second that ping happened, and it was, oh my gosh, there's a woman, Dr. Mary, somebody who drowned in a whitewater rafting trip.
Oh, yeah.
She describes it. I can't remember her last name. She describes it as the sound that a stone makes when plunking in the water. That's
okay,
the sound I heard when my soul left my body.
Really?
Oh, it's the same. And that was a beautiful description she gave. We can't remember her last name.
Yeah.
But, and that's what I heard. And it was a catapulting out. And as soon as it happened, I was like, my heart has stopped. And then I thought, how do I know that? And I thought, I don't know how I know that, but I know that's right.
Yeah.
And then as I'm floating, and I was floating in this perfect blackness. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, and it was pitch blackness, the kind like when you're at a cabin in the woods, you put your hand in front of your eyes, you can't even see it.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I have always been frightened of the dark and slept with a nightlight. But I thought, I feel the most perfect calm and peace I have ever known in this total blackness. And then my next thought was, I'm dying.
Yeah.
And then I thought, actually, you're not dying. You're dead. Because having been an editor for all those years, I'm like, improper tense, Rosemary. Correct the tense.
Right. Oh, God.
And then I laughed out loud. And I thought, that's pretty funny. Here you are going on to your reward and you're worried about proper sentence structure. And I heard myself laugh. And that was so comforting because I thought, I don't have breath sounds. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I don't have lungs or vocal cords or the other accoutrements by which we produce and hear sound. And yet I hear my voice. I sound just like I sounded 20 minutes ago.
Right.
And I thought, everything we really are goes with us, down to our funny little laugh, down to the sound of our voice. And I thought, how fascinating that none of that is dependent on the construct of matter or the body.
Yeah.
We are spiritual beings through and through, 100%. So I was just so enamored of this new experience and thinking, I am free. And I thought, I remember thinking about the tremendous love of the volunteer paramedics who had gotten me out to the ambulance because I lived in a modern house. They couldn't get the gurney in.
Oh.
They literally had to walk me down the steps and out to the ambulance. They showed me so much love And I remember just thinking, as I'm floating away from my body, I remember their love. And I just thought about how much love it took to be in that profession, to remain hopeful, to remain so full of joy, to not complain when you're carrying a 180-pound woman down the steps, you know. So I didn't have a life review, but I had a memory of so much love, and I felt so grateful. So the experience just went on and on. And one of the things that happened that was very important, I remember thinking, because I'm still in this blackness floating, I remember thinking about the Bible verse, the peace that passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. And Paul said that, and I thought, yeah, I get that, because I've never known this peace. This peace supersedes anything I could tell anybody about or naturally explain. And then the other thing I thought was, when I had that thought of, here I am, everything I am went with me. And I thought, what did I leave on that gurney? And I thought, anxiety, fear, worry, misery, regret, sadness, guilt, self-recrimination, none of that went with me.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, I've always wondered what Rosemary, the ruminating, over-anxious writer, would be like without all that not good stuff. Yeah. And I thought, here I am. I want to live. I had no intention of going back. All my life, with few exceptions, almost every day for 45 years, I kept a daily list of things for which to be grateful, 5 things every day. Mm. And on the days where I feel like crap or I'm sick or everything's going wrong, I write, I can see, I can hear, I have fresh water, I have people who love me, and I know about sacred texts, like, the Bible. Yeah. I know that there's a God. I know there are angels. I know that we are loved by things much bigger than ourselves.
Sure.
So in this experience with that habit of daily gratitude, I kept thinking, I'm free. I'm so grateful.
Right.
I'm so grateful. I got out. And I remember thinking, I didn't do this to myself. I got out. I was trying, again, to pursue healing.
Yeah.
And my kids, my 3 children, will never have to say, oh, man, mom offed herself.
Right.
They
right.
will say, oh, mom tried, but she died. I mean, I kept thinking, this is so great. And what I was going to say earlier, one of the really important things that happened is I had this feeling that I had been in this experience, this floating in this blackness before. And I felt the presence of spiritual beings with me. I couldn't see them, but I could feel that I wasn't alone. And I said, why? Why do I feel like I've been here before?
Yeah.
And, like in this 59 years, and the angels, before I could even ask completely, they said, remember when you were an infant and your mom said you almost died and the doctor expected you to die, but then there was a remarkable turnaround and you were healed and, it was all very quick. You didn't almost die.
Oh, no, really?
They said, yeah, you came over here and you got sent back when you were an infant. And I'm like,
wow.
Man, that would have been so good to know 59 years ago. Instead of being the weirdo, even from elementary school, I was the fruitcake, the weirdo, the nut job, the odd one, half a bubble off plum. I was always the one who felt the angels, who heard the angels, who knew when somebody died before the family did.
Wow.
It would have been so much easier to know why I was that person. But I was like, doesn't matter now, on we go. But the other thing, I had zero intention of coming back. The other thing that happened early on, I was joined by a massive spiritual being. And I look again, still in the blackness, I look up and to my left. And I said, with a lilt in my voice, I said, and who are you?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is great. These are my people.
Yeah.
And before I could even finish the question, the answer was immediate. You are the image and likeness. I'm the original.
Yes.
I thought, wow, that's Genesis 1:26. And, I still have gray days. I still have days where I'm sad and I cry and things don't go right and all that. And invariably, I will pass by, like the other day, I passed by a jug of fruit juice and it said, the original. And there's so many times when I'm having a bad day and sometimes I'll see a billboard that says the original.
Yeah.
And it's always, I believe that so many of these little messages we see,
yeah,
God and the angels saying, look over here for a second. We have something to tell you.
Right.
But yeah, everywhere I go, and especially when I'm having a bad day, I see the original. And I remember, I'm only the image and likeness. There is an original, and the original isn't having this bad day.
No.
So I need to just lean into that spiritual fact. And that is such a blessing. So this thing went on and on. And I've told people, if I could sum this up in 3 words, if I had to, it'd be so easy.
Yeah.
But after a lifetime of being the oddball, the weirdo, the cast out, I mean, from being the last kid chosen at kickball forever to being the one who could get straight A's in English and D minuses in phys ed, you know?
Yeah.
God, I hated gym class so bad. I was the last one chosen for everything. And then it got to the point they say, Rosemary, why don't you sit over there and you can be our cheerleader for the game?
Oh, I'm like,
okay. I know what that means. So after a lifetime of being that person,
yeah,
I was with my peeps. But yeah, the whole thing could be summed up in three words, which is welcome home, dearie.
Oh.
I felt these angels were like my tribe. And I'm like, hey, guys, where you been?
Right.
And they did tell me, they did say very clearly, that was a hard one.
Oh.
That was a hard 59 years.
Oh.
Yeah, you had some great things happen, but we know this has been very hard. But you made it.
Yeah.
You did good. And that was such a blessing to hear them say, yeah, that was hard. I mean, you know, the details hardly matter now. But when I was 14, my father ran away from home, had nothing further to do with me and my mom. My mom had a nervous breakdown. So I had to, and a lot of kids go through this, but age 14, I had to go get two jobs. Mm. I went to a vocational school because I wasn't considered suitable for college. And I just had to learn how to grow up instantly at age 14. So that makes for a harder life. And meanwhile, watching my friends go off to college and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it felt like a very hard path. And yet that's why writing was such a blessing.
Yeah.
As I advanced in my writing career, and I ultimately made it to being a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, nobody says, where did you go to college? They say, let me see your writing samples.
Right.
That was my path out of, you know, normal, depressing life. Because when I became a reporter for a big paper, I had a blast. It was hard work, but I had so much fun.
Let me ask you something, Rosemary. When you were there, even in the black void, and I call it that velvet black void that some people say, it wasn't scary. It was so comforting and beautiful and lovely, and I felt cradled. Did it feel more real there than it does here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that was something, I've done a few podcasts, as I mentioned, and it's, I try to tell the story. I try to give different angles every time. I don't want to just go on autopilot. But yes, one of the first things that happened, when I say I awakened from a deep dreamless state, that was in the material condition in the body.
Yes.
And when I did, I felt like, man, I sure got wrapped around the axle over a bunch of trifles. And it really did feel like the whole 59 years of my earth experience was like waking up from a dream. The experience, even in the blackness, had so much depth and so much reality.
Yes.
And to me, especially in light of my husband's messy ending, it was very much like a loving parent shaking you awake as you're lying in the bed having a terrible nightmare, grabbing your shoulders and gently shaking you awake and saying, hey, dearie, wake up.
Yeah.
You're just having a really bad dream, but it's okay.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like, was like waking up. And even now, when I get angry at a romantic partner or frustrated with a friend or, you know, I find myself getting all ratcheted up again, I stop and I, not always, but I try to remember, when you die, it's a slate wiper.
Yes.
And these are trifles and they're not important. The important thing is just to love and be love and live love.
Yes.
That's what's important.
And
you know, Ram Dass said, he's a philosopher, all we're doing on this earth, we get so tangled up in all these different little estuaries of life, but all we're really doing is walking each other home.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, yeah, that's what we're doing here. We're just walking each other home. And that felt like home. Heaven felt like home.
Well, and like I said, you know, I've said this on the podcast before, and I'm not making light of any life that we live, because I do believe in reincarnation. I don't know if you believe in that, but I do.
I hope it's not true, frankly.
Oh. Well, my thing is, when we go there, we want the contrast. We want soul evolution. We are all part of God. I think we're a sliver of God, and we're God experiencing itself. So it's curious and it wants to know what our perception is and what Leslie thought of that or what Rosemary thinks of this. And, oh, you saw the same apple. Yours was a little different color red, and Leslie saw the same apple and it was a different color orange, you know, and that's simplifying it. But also, I just think that, like I said, we're so connected that when we go back, we want that contrast to come back down here and say, hey, I can either, you know, read the book or I can actually play in the book.
Yeah, I believe that. And I'm not a fan of reincarnation. I mean, I do believe we go on. We came from somewhere, sure, and we go on to somewhere. Yeah. But we are living in a cosmos with Carl Sagan said? Millions of universes?
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe we just get recycled back to Earth like a bad aluminum can, you know?
Well, you know, and no, this is why I have people like you on, because I have my belief and you have yours, but I want everyone's perspective. I want to know why you feel that way, because I don't know if I'm right.
Well, and I don't want to go through this again. I mean, I think it'd be kind of unfair to say, hey, we're gonna rip out the memory banks and you go back to Earth as a baby and try again, Missy.
Right. Well, you know, and I always think it this way, because just like when you said you left all that emotional baggage here when you went over to the other side, right? So there's no ego. There was no, oh no, you know, what am I doing? You know, you were like, this is amazing. I'm so thankful. I love this. I'm so grateful. And so when you're up there and you're up there for however long, because time's not a thing, but you think, you know what? I need to go down and help my kids, or I need to go down and help my, I don't know if this is really what happens, because I don't know. And when I say that, I really question people who feel like they do know, because in my mind, my box is open and I try to look at every angle. And if this is true, I would think we would want to come back down and say, listen, I want to get a PhD for God. I want to come down and learn everything I can, you know?
That's true. My friend Ellen, who I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, she's just brilliant. And by brilliant, I mean not only extremely intelligent, but a very bright light in this world. Yeah. But she says, Rosemary, when you came to Earth, you checked way too many boxes of hard human experiences. And I think, yeah, you're right. I did. Yeah. I wouldn't do that again. But she said the problem is when we're in the place before, we don't understand how heavy and hard this Earth experience can be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my experience in heaven kind of went on and on and on. And then at some point, and I don't remember the transition. Yeah. I was not floating in this blackness, but I was standing on my own 2 feet in a white room. Wow. And I say 2 feet, but I was standing on something. And I remember I'm pretty frustrated with myself that I didn't think to look down at my feet, but I did not. But I'm in the white room and I'm in this mist falling around me, but not just falling, but actively circling, enveloping me, like dancing, almost like a heavy fog, but in maybe 10 to 15 feet ahead of me in this white room with this mist, this brightly lit white room, I see a door. And having read all these books, I thought, I know what that door is. That door is where you're no coming back from that door. I go through that door and we're cooked and done. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, I don't know if I have legs or feet, but I know if I move with intention, I can perambulate toward that door. And that is literally the sentence that I thought. And looking back, I'm like, perambulate with intention. But anyway, that's from a lifetime of reading, I guess. I actually used to read the dictionary back in the day.
Right.
But anyway, so I get to the door pretty quickly, but as I'm moving toward the door and I feel this mist around me and see it, I try to focus on a single particle of this mist. Mm-hmm. And it's like a London fog, but it's very bright white.
Yeah.
And an angel that is still with me says, because I said, I feel like I ought to be able to see one of these droplets. And the angel says, what you are seeing are not droplets of vapor, but particles of light. And they are removing the muck of earth from you.
Oh.
And they said, when you go to heaven, you have to have the muck of the earth stripped away from you. And she said, at the time of death, some people are so ingrained with an identity attached to their illness or their medical problems that they need to learn it's no part of their eternal nature.
Yes.
It's no part of their true spiritual identity.
Yeah.
And so this white light cleanses them. And she says, your eyes have not acclimated to this new experience yet. And as I was moving toward this door, literally as fast as I could, because I didn't want anyone changing their mind on this thing.
Right.
the angel said, somewhere in this, and I don't, again, there's no chronology in heaven.
Yeah,
you know, Einstein said to those of us who are committed physicists, the past, present, and future are only illusion.
Right.
However persistent.
It's all happening
but
at
it's,
once.
Yeah, there's just the eternal now. But as I'm advancing toward this door, it was made clear to me that if I did go back, I would be restored to wholeness.
Oh.
And it wasn't, you'll be healed of the cancer, you'll be healed of the mental problems or all this. You will be restored to wholeness. But I see the door. I put my hand up a little miff because the door ought to be open,
right.
But it's shut.
Yeah.
I put up my right hand to push through the door, pretty fascinated by the fact, right-handed on earth, right-handed in heaven. I thought, oh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
But at that moment, the angel, I paused. pause. And I said, is this the divine will for my life? And before I could even get through that question, I got to, is this the divine? That's as far as I got. And the answer was immediate. And the answer was no. But whatever you choose, you go with all of God's blessing and care and love and mercy and grace. There isn't a wrong decision. And that was an answer to that second prayer about the decision fatigue.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about it. It took me a few days before I realized that. But I said, okay, I'm doing the door. And then at that moment, I had a vision of that motherly nurse who had been so kind to me.
Yes.
Who had promised me she wasn't going to let me die. Oh. And I saw her. And vision is the wrong word. It was like I was in a hospital supply room as a silent witness to her. And she was surrounded by linens and all the things that are in a hospital supply room.
Yeah.
And she was sitting on a metal stool in the middle of the room, sobbing, leaning forward, head in her hands.
Oh.
And through tears, I could hear her say, I promised that woman I wasn't going to lose her. And now she's dead. And I thought, oh, come on. Way to get an empath, you know? Right. Way to just slay me instantly.
Now you gotta go back.
I can't describe how I wasn't just observing this. I was co-experiencing this with her.
You were her.
And yet she had no idea me and the angel were in that room.
Wow.
And this was a potential future. People say, well, where was the nurse? The nurse was trying to resuscitate me at this moment.
Oh.
But I think this was a potential future outcome.
Really?
I really do. And then in the next moment, I'm like, all right, she's my age, retirement age. She's lost people before, she'll get over it. But then I was given her pain, the pain of deep guilt, deep regret, and self-recrimination.
Oh.
And I knew that pain from having been through 29 months of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I'm done. And I said out loud to the angel, I said, if I can spare one human walking this earth that kind of pain, I have to go back.
Sure.
And man, was that hard.
Oh,
man, was that hard.
Yes.
But in the microsecond, literally a microsecond, less than that, a nanosecond, I was back on that gurney. In that hospital room. And there was an angel in the upper left-hand corner of the room looking down at me. She was like a ball of spinning, bright, colorful, beautiful light. And I said, seriously, Robert's Rules of Order, we should have had, you know, a first, a second, and then discussion.
Right.
Where was the discussion? I made a comment. I didn't mean for it to be the end.
Oh,
what?
No.
Point of order here.
Yeah.
And the angel looked at me and just smiled and waved and said, hi, you're back. I'm like, yeah, thanks. And then I was, they couldn't wait to get me out of there. I'm pretty sure they thought I was going to die again. So now I got loaded on an ambulance immediately, sent out the door, and the ambulance, lights and siren, high rate of speed. I was taken to a trauma center where I should have gone first.
Right.
And I know the ambulance staff, the two guys on the ambulance, were terrified I was going to die on them again.
Mm.
But during this time, and this is one of my favorite stories, I was in the back of that ambulance. Well, they were loading me into the ambulance. I remember thinking, all my life I've spent reading about NDEs, and now I've had one. And it's nothing like I thought it should be. I've never even heard of a white room. I haven't heard of floating in blackness. I hear about wildflowers and meeting your loved ones and being in a great big field. I get a floating in blackness in a white room. But anyway.
They knew if they gave you too much, you would for sure not come back, right?
I think so. And the thing is, the number one ugly email I get from people is, you made it all up for the money. I'm like, well, for the money, ha ha. But I made it all up. If I was going to make it up, I would have had something traditional.
Right.
I wouldn't have come up with this weird stuff. Yeah. But, you know, since I had my experience, I've had a lot of people write me and say, I was in the white room too.
Yes. The white light, the velvet void, all of those things I've heard over and over. And a lot of times they don't see anyone. They just feel the angels, or they just feel God, source, whatever you want to call it. And sometimes they see Jesus, sometimes, you know, whoever they believe in. Most of the time, though, they don't really see anyone. They may see someone, like you said, didn't you say you saw your friend who had passed?
No, I did not see. It is as you just described. I felt the presence of the angels.
Okay.
I felt the presence of the original, but I never saw anybody.
Okay, yeah. But you felt them. So you knew they were there, and it was no question. And it was almost like you were them, they were you, because we're all connected. So yeah, I've interviewed a woman who, good Catholic girl, and she went to hell on her NDE.
Yes. Is that Catherine?
Catherine, yes. And obviously know the story. And her friend had died.
McDaniel.
Kathy McDaniel. Yeah, I had her on. And she had lost her friend. And after she'd gone through the whole thing, and obviously she sang her Christmas song and got out of the hell that she was in, her friend said, "See, it was all in your head." And she was like, "Well, crap, you know."
but you know,
this is not a slam on religion, because I think religion is beautiful for so many people. I'm not particularly religious, however, I'm very spiritual. But it did make her understand there's not like a religion there. There is a God. I think a lot of the scripture is real. Do you know what I mean? There's not like you have to be Catholic or you have to be Buddhist or you have to be Protestant. There's none of that, right?
Yeah, I had one podcast host ask me, and that was a brilliant question. He said, "Was there a separate line for goats and sheep?" And claim is, we go into heaven as sheep, we're protected by the rules of divinity. Oh. We go in as goats, and off you go to hell. So yes, there was not a line for goats or sheep. It was just, and it was very welcoming. But when I was being loaded in that ambulance, I remember thinking that this was different. But when I was in the ambulance on the ride to the hospital, because that could have been scary.
Yeah.
But there was this enormous angel that filled the ambulance, and she kept telling me really, really funny stories.
Yeah.
And I had an oxygen mask at this point, and I kept taking off the oxygen mask to laugh out loud.
Yeah, that was
funny. And finally, one of the paramedics took and snapped that thing back on, and he said, "I told you, stop taking that off," which I thought was pretty funny. And my friend who had accompanied me, he said he had been a Vietnam era medic, my buddy who had been my caregiver, taking such good care of me.
Yeah.
But he said, "I had never seen anybody literally white as a sheet." He said, "But you were white." Oh. And he said, "Your lips were like India ink, and under your eyes was purplish."
Oh.
He said, "So it was obvious you were beyond death. You were very, very ill looking."
Yeah.
And he said, "I didn't know anybody could actually look like that and still be alive."
Wow.
And so, but yeah, the angels kept talking to me, or the angel told me all these funny stories, which cracked me up. And then at the hospital, I know we're short on time, but I was in the hospital for a few days. And the first morning, the doctor, you know, once you've died under a corporate hospital's name, they send in the good doctors.
Oh.
But
yeah.
The doctor said, "You had a heart attack and died last night."
Oh.
He said, "Your heart stopped." That's what he said.
Okay.
And I said, "Well, I'm extremely healthy. What makes you think I had a heart attack?" And he said, "Well, your blood enzymes are way, way up, and then they've already started to come down. So we know it's not underlying heart disease." But he said, "Last night, your heart did stop." He said, "You ran out of enough blood to support life."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, how much blood is that?" He said, "It doesn't matter. It was enough that your heart stopped."
Wow.
Because I'm like, analytical, man. Give me some numbers.
Right.
I need numbers.
Yeah.
But then I had, again, my couple lovely friends who kept me company in the hospital and sat with me and made sure everything was going as it should. But when my friends would leave the hospital room, the angels would surround my bed. And I've told this story so many times, and this is the only thing that always gets to me.
Yeah.
But the angels surrounded three sides of my bed. And they were tall. They were wearing gowns of light, like little beads. And the beads were filled with light, heavenly, bright, bright, blue-white light.
Mm.
And they sang me songs. They sang me the most beautiful songs glorifying God.
Mm.
And I said to them, "I have a really good photographic memory, but melody and lyrics, not so much. I'm not going to be able to remember these songs."
Yeah.
And I said, "I want to. I don't ever want to forget the melody or the lyrics." And the angels said, "This is not for you to remember. This is for your healing and for your peace and for your joy." And they said, "And this is a thank you. This is how we express gratitude to you for coming back."
Aww.
And they said, "We know that life on earth is hard, and coming back to this, we knew, is a hard decision for you. So thank you. That's what this singing is for."
Oh.
And probably the number one email I get is from people who've lost a child or a spouse in some tragic, bad way. And they say, they are so relieved that the angels that are watching out for us know that life on earth is hard.
Yes.
And that's what the angel said. We know this is hard. And, you know, I felt like where my tummy is, like, you know, my intestinal area or whatever, it felt weird. And I asked the angels, "Am I going to die again? You know, why do I feel so weird?"
Yeah.
And they said simply, they said, "We're still sorting things out.
Mm.
Healing is happening, but you're going to be fine, and you're not going to die again for 20 years.
Oh,
we're
wow.
done with this." And I got out of the hospital and I went home and all those physical problems I had had before were gone. Oh, and they told me it would take 2 to 3 months for my bone marrow to regenerate all the blood I needed to stop with the breathlessness and have white blood cell count go back up.
Yeah.
And I had a friend, he was a Christian Science practitioner, and I called him and I said, George, they say it's going to be months before I can feel normal again. And George said, oh, we'll just see about that. And 14 days later, I had complete blood work done. And the doctor looked at the blood work and he said, I see there's a mistake with your blood work. And I said, what is it? He said, your numbers are textbook perfect.
Oh.
And I said, that's not a mistake. I'm back on my bike. I'm riding again.
Yeah.
He said, what? I said, yeah, the breathlessness has been gone for a few days.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then the other thing it took, I went back to the original oncologist.
Yes.
I was supposed to start chemo and radiation as soon as possible.
Mm.
And I said, doctor, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm pretty sure I was healed in heaven. And he wouldn't hear of it. And I got a very stern lecture from him about how I was going to die from cancer.
Oh, Lord.
And it was very dark and very rough.
Wow.
And so I had to find another oncologist. I had to drive about 50 miles away because everyone was scared of this oncologist I was seeing on the East Coast. He was a big deal.
Yeah.
But she agreed to do another biopsy, and it was unfortunately a surgical biopsy. And this time she opened me up and took flesh from all kinds of places around my lady parts.
Yeah.
And she was pretty nervous. She said, Rosemary, if you're wrong, you've already missed a month of chemo and radiation.
Mm.
I said, I don't think I'm wrong. And she said, and if you are wrong, my career's on the line. I said, doctor, I call her Dr. Lovely in the book.
Yes.
I said, Dr. Lovely, your career may be on the line, but it's my life on
right.
the line. So she did the surgery and she actually shook me awake. You know, once I was in recovery, she shook me awake and she had tears in her eyes.
Mm.
And she said, you are right. She said, every tissue sample, there's not one cell of cancer any of the samples we took.
That's amazing.
And what she said to my friend in the waiting room, good patient friend,
yeah.
she told him, she said, if I hadn't, she said, her flesh is so pink and pretty and perfect. If I hadn't seen the test, I wouldn't believe she ever had cancer.
Wow.
So see, I get a lot of people in the NDE, in the anti-NDE world, they go, oh, you know, it's just your brain shutting down. Blah,
You're
blah,
right.
Blah.
Yeah.
And that's why my story, I think, is special.
Yes.
Because the brain shutting down doesn't remove stage 2 cancer.
No. Well, also, the brain shutting down doesn't make it to where you don't remember a dang thing. I've interviewed another person who said, I remember looking down at the doctors working on me, and I knew why he was a doctor. I knew how many kids he had. I'd never met the guy in my life, but we're all connected, and I immediately knew who he was. And she could recite some of the things they said. So it's not our brains. Yes, our brains hold our 3D spirit. But, you know, you were you on the other side. You were Rosemary.
Yes, yes. Well, I wasn't Rosemary. I left that identity behind,
oh,
but
yes,
I was
yes.
the essence of who I am.
Yes, because I remember you saying when they were trying to retrieve you, or maybe you read about it, never try to retrieve someone who's about to die, calling their name. Tell them something else, right? Tell me that little part that you were telling another person.
Oh. Well, I said, as I was floating further and further away from my body, I heard somebody screaming.
Yeah.
But it was like the dull buzz of an alarm clock.
Yeah.
It's just annoying you. And I realized, you know, the word personality comes from the Latin word for mask.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized in retrospect, they were calling my name. But I mean, I can't even go in a grocery store and hear somebody scream mommy without spinning around to see what's going
right.
on, you know, because I've been mommy for 45 years.
Yeah.
But you shed that identity immediately. And I suggested jokingly that say, you know, the blueberry muffins are ready. But paramedics are, I saw this on a TV show,
yeah.
that they say they've realized that calling their name doesn't help. What helps is saying, your mother still needs you,
oh,
or your
yes.
children still need
yes.
you. And that has had a higher success rate in getting people back.
That's profound. That's amazing. I never thought of it that way. And it's so true because you know what? Nobody calls me by my first name here. I'm mom, I'm mama, I'm Mimi. Every now and then, if I'm at the store with my husband and I hear, Leslie, I know it's my husband, but it startles me. I'm like, why are you so mad at me? And he was
yeah.
just trying to get my attention, you know, because he's the best man ever. But, you know, it's just funny. You're right. Your identity is so different.
Yes. And it was gone. I mean, it just, the second my body stopped working, the moment of, quote, death,
yeah.
Yeah. I was no longer Rosemary. I left that behind. Wow. And I think, you know, everyone asked, did you see your loved ones? I wonder if I did, but because I remember being in the blackness and I remember being in the light in that white room, but I don't remember the transition.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wonder if I got a visit with friends and family, but I also know of every loss I've had. And when you get to be 65, you've had a lot of losses, or at the time I was 58.
Yeah.
But when you've had all those losses, the loss that hit me the hardest was my mother. And so I know if I had seen Mom, nothing could have dragged me back to this life. My mother's been gone 25 years and not a day of my life I don't think about her.
Oh, you know, I was going to tell you, my mom passed away in 2017, and a lot of my listeners know this, but I've had psychic mediums on my podcast say, you know, all you have to do is talk to her. She's right there. Just like you said, you were right there watching that woman cry. It may not have been specifically what was for sure happening. You thought maybe that was a future event had you not come back. But, you know, they're right there. And girl, I think I told you the last time we talked, I can have full-on conversations now with my mom. And I know it's her because it's things I don't come up with myself. And it's all of the light. It's all good. It's nothing bad. And I asked her, I said, be one of my guides, you know, be, you know, whatever help you can be to me. And she has been. And she's guided me beautifully. And I was not real close to her in life. I was, but not really. I adore her now. And I've healed so much of like that shadow part of the horrible things that happen when you're a kid.
Yeah. I believe my mother was my soulmate.
Absolutely. I believe your parents can be soulmates. I believe friends can be soulmates. I don't think you just have one soulmate and it's a lover.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure my mom was mine, because when she was on this earth, we just had a connection. And I think part of it is because when I was sick for 3 weeks as an infant, I contracted an iatrogenic disease at the hospital. And for 3 weeks, I was critically ill. And my mother spent that time sitting in a room with a friend praying for me. So I think that's a bond of love is just strengthened. But I used to go out and do work on old houses. You know, I didn't have cell phones in the 80s. And so my mother, who was getting on in years, would say, Rosemary, if I need you, how can I reach you? There's no phone where you're at.
Yeah.
And I'd say, Mom, just think about how much you love me. That's the carrier signal.
Yeah.
And I say, and then call my name and I will hear you.
Oh.
And so one day I'm out on this job site rebuilding this piece of crap old house. And I hear just clear as a bell, I hear, Rosemary. And so I said, Mom. And I dropped everything and I ran to the payphone 2 blocks away, you know, and put my quarter in and called my mother. And she laughed and she said, that was just a test.
Girl, that is, you know, do you think you gained abilities the 2 times you've been to the other side?
I think my mother and I had a special connection.
Yeah.
Because even when I was 5 years old, one day my father asked, my mom had gone out shopping. And my father asked me, where's your mother now? And I said, oh, she's on the big street, but she's getting ready to turn onto the street where we live.
Yeah.
And he said, where is she now? And I said, she's pretty close to our house now.
Wow.
And he said, my mom pulled up within a few seconds of that. So I think that when we were just connected by love in a very profound and sturdy way, you know, love can either be a tiny little quarter inch conduit or a 6 inch, you know, sewer line, although that's probably not a great analogy, but yeah. And my mother and I were like that through the years. And I think we all can do it. I think we all can do it.
Right.
I mean, how many stories have you heard about a mother who knows her son died in war?
Absolutely.
Because the son appears at the foot of the bed and says, Mom, I have to go now.
Absolutely. I agree. And guys, Rosemary has written a book. Rosemary, tell everybody about your book and the name of it, and I'm going to add it to the show notes.
Okay. My website is temporarydeath.com. I'm not a fan of the term near death, because those of us who've really crossed over, we're not near. And my book is Remembering the Light, How Dying Saved My Life.
Okay. Listen, Rosemary, as you can tell, is very proficient in the English language. So you know it's going to be a great read. Listen, Rosemary, I've really enjoyed talking to you. And if you ever remember anything else, sometimes that happens, you can come back on and you can tell me more things. But it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Well, I love providing Because I Want to Know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review, or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing.
So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist, and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again, and I will see you next week.